Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Morning, folks. Steve Williamson here.
My cousin Tino here. We've got a hard-hitting show this morning on Democratic Perspective. We're going to talk about philosophy.
Truth, justice, in the American way.
Or the lack thereof.
Yes.
Of all those.
And who do we have with us in the studio today?
We have a philosopher. Andrea, I'm going to screw up your last name.
Oh, hi. This is Andrea Christel.
Andrea Christel, not Andrea. Like I said, you should be famous with that name, and we're going to fix that up today. It should be on. Seems like it should be on a bottle of wine, but we're in a time when truth is such a rare artifact. I mean, I've been saying that for years. Truth is an artifact. It's gone. And then along comes the Trump administration, and Kellyanne Conway and these purveyors of alternative facts. So.
Let's start with alternative facts.
Now, wait. Well, first, we want to talk about who are you why did you show up with the yellow microphone?
Did you graduate from high school, for example?
Yeah, you got the yellow microphone, so here you are. Tell us what's Specs, and who are you?
Well, I'm Andrea Christel, and Specs is Sedona Philosophy Experience, and we do philosophy and outdoor adventure here in beautiful Sedona, Arizona. We combine contemplation and reflection with hiking in the beautiful Red Rocks, and it's a lot of fun. And so if you're in Sedona or planning to visit Sedona, we hope that you'll visit us.
But this morning, we're twisting your wonderful company and your ideas into a political. We're drawing the politics out of it.
So let's start with alternative facts. The famous event is this. Kellyanne Conway is justifying something that Trump said that was profoundly not true or not factual, and she said he's operating or he's using alternative facts. So what is the idea of alternative facts, and how does that affect, you know, political discourse?
Sure. Well, I think I'd like to say two things about that. And one is that I think that the idea of alternative facts is actually a plausible idea. However, I think Kellyanne Conway misused it, because what Sean Spicer reported was a deliberate misrepresentation. And so I think that she has used those terms synonymously, you know, a deliberate misrepresentation or a lie with an alternative fact. Now, here's why I think that alternative facts that is actually a plausible concept. So if you think of experiencing light as a particle or experiencing light as a wave, both of these ideas are plausible, right? They're alternative ways of experiencing light. Similarly, when the Titanic was interviewed people who were around the Titanic, whether it went down, if the ship was broken in two, or whether it went straight down, you get mixed reports. So it's possible for there to be a state of affairs for a group of people to see those things and actually experience them in different way. So for that reason, I think that the idea of alternative facts is actually a plausible idea. But that is very different from knowing one thing to be the case and intentionally misrepresenting what you understand the case to be.
So on one hand, you have like the famous story about the blind men and the elephant. And each one of them goes up and touches the elephant, comes back with a very different, true, but alternative impression of what the elephant is. One guy touches the tusk, another one the trunk, another one the leg. And so you get alternative impressions of what the elephant is from the blind man.
That's a great example.
But these are blind guys. We think we know the truth. You know, fine, okay, we elected at least intellectually blind. Trump is equivalent to one of those. But we think we know, those of us that can see the whole elephant, and we know what it is. So what Andrea is saying is true. It rings true to us. It's not alternative facts. There's alternative facts, which there's a case for, but there's no case, at least we're not going to make one this morning, for lying.
Well,
this
is not normal. The thing about the blind men is neither one of them, none of them are lying, and none of them are exactly wrong. They're just, their story is just incomplete.
Right, but that's, I mean, I think that's importantly different, right? So the blind men, I think, did have alternative facts, different ways of experiencing the same reality. I think what happened in the case of, Sean Spicer reporting about the Trump's inauguration is he was deliberately misrepresenting what was there. And that's something else altogether. And I'd like to talk a little bit about why I think people have been so bothered by this idea of alternative facts. I mean, on the one hand, it seems like we're upset by this very possibility of alternative facts. But I don't think that that's really what is upsetting people. As I've just described, and we've, you know, heard other stories about why, you know, having alternative facts or alternative ways of experiencing a situation are plausible. I think what we really care about here is the fact that the presidential administration appears to be deliberately dishonest. And I think it's the value of honesty that we really care about. That's why people are so upset. It's not the idea that there might be an alternative fact. It's the fact that the president, the office of the president, is deliberately lying to the American people, and we care about the value of honesty.
And especially in that office. We go to buy a car, a used car. We don't necessarily always expect total honesty. And we are prepared for how that's going to come at us. But when it's the president, the leader of the free world, which they like to use, I don't...
Well, we expect spin. We expect politicians to put the best gloss on whatever they decide
we
to
expect
do
politicians
or
to do
say.
That. We don't expect the president to always do
but
that.
But systematically lying.
Maybe we're being naive.
I'd like to talk at some point about does Trump actually have a concept of truth. According to Fact Checker, and he's been in office for about 4 months now, they have counted 586 false and misleading claims in 4 months. It's systematic. Mm-hmm. Wow. It's absolute. It's daily lies, basically, to further his agenda. So I guess what is honesty? Trump seems to believe that honesty is what the thing to say and what's true and what's honest is whatever benefits him in his own mind in a particular time. So he'll say one thing one day and he'll say the thing the next. So what's going on?
You know, well, what is honesty is a really interesting question. And there's actually a philosopher, Harry Frankfurt, who's retired from Princeton, but he wrote a book called On Bullshit. And he wanted to examine the concept of bullshit because...
We are on radio, so...
It's a family show.
It's a family show, so...
Okay, we'll call it bull,
yes.
Right?
Yes, on bull.
And
he
wanted to distinguish bull from lying because he thought there was something really different happening there, right? If people are just sitting around shooting the bull, right, they may not be aiming at truth in the most careful way. They may be testing ideas out. They may be doing something that's different than lying. Right? So lying assumes you know what the truth is, and you are intentionally trying to put an idea out there that misrepresents the truth.
Yeah.
So I think honesty is a really interesting issue, and we can really strive to be as honest and clear and straightforward as possible. I think there's an in-between stage where we could say, you know, we're just sort of shooting the bull. We're not being really careful about this. But then there's the case of being deliberately dishonest and deceptive. And I think that is what people are really offended by.
So what did Kant say about this?
Well, Kant was unequivocal about the fact that you should always try to tell the truth.
So we're doing philosophy, so we got to bring up
why should we tell
a philosopher
the truth?
Once in a while.
I got you, but why should we tell the truth? Why is that a good thing rather than just telling lies that'll further our interest, you know? And if we can get people to believe our lies, why is that not better than why? I mean, the truth is troublesome. The truth has all kinds of conflicts. It causes us to pause and think. It's not always a cheery, happy moment.
So First of all, we can talk about why Kant thought you should always tell the truth. He said that he thought that moral laws needed to be universalizable. He talked about having a categorical imperative. If you're going to have a moral law, then you need to be able to say, I would will that people do this in every instance. And so he thought you couldn't will in every instance that people would lie. Since you couldn't do that, you must will in every instance that people tell the truth. Now, Steve, you raised an interesting point. I think that lying, again, is something different than always telling the truth, right? So if, you know, someone prepares a meal and you don't particularly enjoy that meal, right, it would be a lie to say, I loved it. It was really delicious, right? But you don't necessarily have to truth. You could just say nothing, right? You could just say nothing. So I don't know that we always have to tell the truth about everything we experience in order for us not to lie.
One of the things we want to get to is the impact of the lying, of the alternative facts. We started talking about alternative facts today, and it seems to have on us a really there's lies, and those are bad. Because we're not getting the truth out of our government, our elected representatives, and that we expect better. But it's having an incredibly profound impact, I think, on our general sense of well-being and our access or our handling of information.
No, I think that's absolutely right. It is undermining our sense of well-being because it really breaches our trust, right? So, I mean, I think Steve brought up earlier the fact that, you know, politicians might twist things in one way or another. You mentioned used car salesmen, like, look, I'm not expecting to be the most candid, straightforward people. Mm-hmm. However, I mean, I think there is some degree of trust in our government. And I think that the feeling that we're deliberately being deceived, right, by the institution that is supposed to serve the common good and our mutual interest, right, seems to be doing the very reverse of that. I think there's a profound sense of anxiety.
And I have to add, so completely, Steve mentioned that, well, this isn't exactly new for politics. We, you know, we expect politics to spin, politicians to spin ideas one way or the other. But this, as we said, the sheer number, the sheer load here, we have a load of lies, a load of alternative facts.
It's also the obviousness, isn't it? Isn't that the problem with Trump's staff, is that his lies are so obvious and so completely indefensible that, like, you get phrases like alternative facts used by Kellyanne Conway as a way to try to justify, and you see them. You know, his press secretary hiding in some bushes so he doesn't have to explain the latest non-truth.
Well, and that's it. And they don't let go of, you know, there are some alternative facts as again.
But I think I like Mike's point, and I want to ask you about this. What's the overall impact of having a president, and we can talk about this concept of truth later, who basically lies all the time and changes his story? Is that going to have an impact on the way people see truth or the way people, the rest of us, behave? Does that give us permission to just make stuff up?
I don't think it gives us permission to just make stuff up, but I hope, I mean, this show, Democratic Perspective, right? I mean, what will the impact be? I hope that the impact will be that people will get involved, and I think we've started to see involvement that we haven't seen before. I think people are starting small coffee clutches, grassroots organizations are popping up. We've seen that here in Sedona. Our League of Women Voters chapter has grown by over 200%. I've been to community meetings where people say, I've never been involved in politics before, but now I care. I think the result will be, hopefully, people will show up. Hopefully, people will vote. Hopefully, people will take an interest in who is representing them. And it really does matter. And it matters on every level, at the local city council level, at the state legislature. Who is in the Arizona state legislature is a huge issue that impacts us all. And you know, finally, you know, in our U.S. Congress and in, you know, 2020, you know, we're going to have an opportunity to change, right, the moral character of the person that is in the highest office.
Go back to Trump, but you've led and participated in a bunch of dialogues between conservatives and moderates and liberals.
Mm-hmm.
How did they go when you guys arranged people with very different opinions about politics, very different, coming from very different slant? How did that work? Did you get any real dialogue going?
Or you guys, you're talking about our company?
No, I'm talking about some work that she did before.
Right, but I mean, we'll do the same thing with SPEC, Sedona Philosophy Experience. We'll be having community deliberative dialogues, and I think that those are really powerful, and it's important for people that see themselves as disagreeing with people on the quote-unquote other side to come together, because I think what happens is people think that they disagree about facts, and they might disagree about facts, but when they come together, I think we usually find that underneath it all, people do agree about certain core values, like honesty. And I'll give you an example. A program we did recently with the League of Women Voters, we were talking about the goodness of government. And, you know, we said, like, on balance, you know, we hear a lot of criticisms of government. Don't get the government involved. The government's always bad. But really, we're better off having a government than not. If you really want no government, you know, there are places in the world that are like that. They're generally not considered very desirable places to live. But we started that conversation not by trying to make the case for the goodness of government. We said, we know there are people out there that do think government is always a problem. So let's try to find out why. Let's listen to those people and let's assume that they're not entirely crazy and that they have some reasons for their view. And I think by doing that, by opening up and listening to the people with whom you disagree, we can see that although you may not, you know, weigh the balance of reasons the same, that these people aren't thoroughgoingly crazy. But one of the things that came up is someone said, I think that the problem with government is that there's not a flat tax system.
Right.
That's fine. Someone else said, you know, I think the problem with government, or I don't think there should be a flat tax system. I think we should have a graduated income tax because people with more money or that have higher incomes usually benefit more from infrastructure. So they're trading these reasons on why there should be a flat tax or not a flat tax. And I was able to say, you know, notice, although we disagree about this fact, about this practical matter of implementation, what both the people agree about is that things should be fair.
Right.
And when it comes down to it, you know, most liberals, conservatives, however you paint yourself, if you're an independent like me, most people value fairness. And I think if we can start there and see where our values align, then if we disagree about the practical matters of the tax structure, we're always going to disagree about the practical matters of implementation. Well, but coming together gives us an opportunity to see how much we are alike and not always focus on how we disagree.
Well, that's it. I'm always trying to say about democratic perspective, when we want to step back from some of our, when we get into the weeds politically pretty good here on the show, but that's what we do. We're a partisan show. But as democratic perspective, we want to feed children. You know, we want to, and I don't think that we can argue maybe how about how those children should be fed.
Exactly.
But if there are hungry children in school, then we should feed them. We want old people to be able to live and die with dignity, we think that that's something we can agree on. So on democratic perspective, we don't want to socialize the world. We just want old people to live and die in dignity. We want children, hungry children, in a wealthy nation, we should be able to provide them. That's it. I mean, there's a couple of other things. We think healthcare is a right, and then we can start talking about those. So yeah, I think you're absolutely correct. When I have arguments, philosophical arguments with my conservative friends. And now we have to draw, by the way, a distinction, especially on a show like this, between Trumpsters and conservatives. I think that we have a brand new set of of things, of alternative facts that create a conservative point of view as opposed to a Trump point of view.
I think that's values, but we have a whole lot of people that voted for Donald Trump knowing that he was lying because the lies he told made them feel good, made them reinforce their resentment. The problem was Muslims. The problem was Mexican. The problem was a weakness. We weren't killing enough people overseas. You know, there's
And the people, liberals are saying the problem is Walmart. The problem is
well, I don't think it works quite like that. But the thing is that when what you're talking about, Mike, is different values. So I'm a conservative, say, and you say everybody has a right to health care. Well, I don't believe that. I believe that you earn your health care by hard work. And you earn it for your family and you're on your own. And if you don't do that, if you don't have a job, you don't deserve health care. I'm a libertarian, say. That's a difference in values. But I think we need to talk again, return to talk about truth and facts, and because these values, how are you going to cross them? And you know, it's my fault because I asked Andrea, like, how did those dialogues go? And they got down to deeper values, right?
Often they do, but you know, you're really raising an interesting point about, you know, where we have fundamental conflicts of values. I mean, that's where it's more important than ever to have these conversations. I think it's always kind of a relief when we come to some shared value like fairness. But you know, when you're talking about healthcare, I think you're right that there's a fundamental difference of value there about what we owe to our fellow citizens and the kind of country we want to live in. And I know one of the most frightening things that we've experienced, right, is that I think a value, you know, on this show and widely shared, right, is in the fundamental dignity of human beings everywhere, right, and a fundamental equality of persons. And I think that we're surprised to learn about people in this country that don't feel this way, people that want to discriminate on the basis of race or the basis of religion, and that we have this fundamental value conflict that's coming up, that it's going to be more important for us ever than ever to get together and to discuss those values and to be able to defend why, right, we want to have health care and education, right, and fair conditions.
Now, let me ask you a question here, and it's a big question, so I don't expect a real answer. What's the relationship, and this is something Mike brought up, what's the relationship between facts and values? In other words, if we start talking about health care, we can say that the new Republican plan looks like it'll knock 24 million people off of it. And they can say, oh, no, it won't. We're going to blah, blah. And we can say, so those are about facts. But so how do facts relate to values? Why is it important to respect the facts, whatever our values?
That's a great question, and I think it's one that we would all benefit from thinking more about, because facts and values are really two different sorts of things, right? We think that facts are descriptions that accurately describe the world and that they're objective conditions that we can all agree upon. But I think values describe, right, what matters to us most, and what our values are can be articulated, although it's far more difficult to articulate our values than it is to articulate a fact. But values really drive, you know, what we care about and how we set our priorities. We use facts in service to our values. So if I value health care, right, because I value, right, a healthy body and think that human health is a joy and a pleasure that we should extend as far and as widely as possible. That's a belief I have about what matters in the world. I can't prove it, right, but it is a belief I have about what matters in the world. Then I can collect up facts about how much money it costs to build a hospital, how much money it, you know, costs to provide certain types of care, what drugs are effective in treating what illnesses. Those are all facts.
The problem is you have people dying for lack of health care and people that don't believe it. That the advent or the loss of Obamacare, as flawed as it may be, that's prior to Obamacare, 685 Arizonans died every year for lack of health care. 18,000 Americans died every year for lack of health care.
That Republican congressman, Mike.
Facts. We can, these are facts. But they don't believe them. I don't believe that. This
well,
is America.
There's a Republican congressman who said, no one dies from a lack of medical insurance.
That's right. That's right, exactly. And then you have our leaders that reinforce the alternative facts. And but I do want to get back to one other thing that we talked about, because it's important, and we're talking about the response to all this. One of the things that philosophy, or at least study, does, is try to sort these things out and be able to manage them, at least emotionally and as intellectually. And the idea is that you mentioned was so many people entering and becoming more interested in politics, which certainly people like Steve and I see that as a good thing, mm-hmm. to get the involvement. You know, we have a much more fair system, if fairness is our goal, if everybody participates. You know, we got elections where, you know, 51, 52, 56% of the people are voting, that the whole nature of elected office changes when you have 76% voting, or like in Belgium where 95% of the people vote because they have to pay a $500 fine if they don't vote. But the idea is that this involvement, the shock of 500 plus lies after 4 months in office, and we don't even mention the campaign, and that I'm going to wrap this up is with Republican, and we're going to expand it a little. You know, people like Sylvia Allen, our representative, gets elected because every year she gets these wonderful articles that talk about how much in favor she is of education, and it's full of alternative facts, or, as we like to call them on this show from now on, lies. She doesn't support education, okay. But she says she does.
All right, let's Sylvia Allen believes the world is 6,000 years old. That's a belief. It's not a fact.
She can
talk a little bit.
As much as she wants.
Talk about truth and opinion and belief. What's the difference between these things? I believe the world's 6,000 years old. Science says it's, you know, billions of years old. How is that resolved? I mean, or is it ever resolved? I mean, if I have a belief, if I think that I have an absolute truth that the world is a certain age, are any facts going to matter to me at all?
So, Steve, I feel like you just like set this up in my like 101 philosophy class. But this is like, you know, Plato's allegory of the cave, right? This is like climbing out of the cave. That's what it is. It's like, what is the difference between opinion and belief and understanding and knowledge, right? And that is just the crawl out of the cave. And I just want to mention, if you like radio and you like philosophy, there's a radio show called Philosophy Bakes Bread, and some friends of mine, Anthony Cascio and Eric Weber, talked about this very thing. I mean, they used Plato's allegory of the cave as a way to try to sort through what is the difference between opinion and belief and knowledge and understanding. And so, do you want to do Plato's allegory of the cave?
All right.
But
what is truth in the simplest thing? I mean, in the most practical sense. I mean, is it facts?
So let's just say this, that people are often confused about what the truth is, and that's the point of the allegory, right? When they start off in the cave and people are just seeing shadows on a wall, and the shadows are from being cast by real objects held in front of a fire, right? That's what's happening. The people, because they can't move their heads, can only see the shadows, so they have no choice to believe that the shadows are just as real or more real, that they don't know there is any other thing. When they're released from their chains and they can see the real things in front of the fire, they say, oh, now I see how much different the shadows that I believed were real are than the real objects. And I mean, I think this is an allegory to help us understand that whatever we currently believe, we usually don't actively believe we're mistaken about our beliefs. Yet we can be mistaken about our beliefs. And I mean, I think that's one of the things we have to grapple with in life whenever we feel the sense of certitude.
Well, and also
right?
Believe in Plato's allegory that there were those people that preferred the shadows. They preferred the distorted truth. They preferred the lies, and they clung to them because they were too uncomfortable with the reality.
Well, look, if you're looking at shadows and suddenly you see something in three dimensions and bright colors and stuff, it can be overwhelming when you walk out of a shadow world into a world where you can see more clearly. I think Mike's right. I think a lot of people don't want to leave that. They feel security.
What can we do about them?
I think a lot of people, the mind doesn't work to find truth for them. And we had one of a really good program a couple of years ago. The mind is designed to to find safety first rather than truth. Is that, what do you think, Andrea?
I think that's really insightful, and I think that unfortunately a lot of times the way these things are framed is in an adversarial way, and so if somebody has got it wrong, we want to prove the other person wrong instead of trying to discover and learn more together. And one of the things that we try to do through deliberative dialogue and talking is instead of to frame everything so that there's a winner or a loser or someone's going to be proven wrong, because people just don't like to be told that their ideas, their values about the world are wrong. But if we can come together and say, help me understand what you think and why, would you give me an opportunity to explain, you know, what I value, what my values are and the reasons for those are? You know, is there maybe some common ground that it doesn't seem like we have, but we could move that out together and we could build a new shared understanding without trying to prove the other person wrong? That's just a more hospitable, you know, environment for people to work together to try to create a good society. I mean, I think that we really want to have strong communities and a healthy country. And I don't think we do have that right now, but I think that there are opportunities to create it, and I think there's a will among the American people right now to come together and do community work and to get engaged politically.
Well, we've mentioned on the show before the indivisible groups, the huddle groups, the League of Women Voters, the League of Conservation Voters. So many of these things are burgeoning now, at least with the activity and membership, that the response to is more involvement and an attempt at understanding. I was at one of your organized sessions where people are trying, of different ideas, are trying to coordinate and come up with and meet in groups and come to some general consensus by the end of the of the session. And the it's amazing that the process of common ground, of finding common ground, is really relatively simple and helpful, but without some sort of organizing influence. In this particular case, the lies of Donald Trump, and we don't get there. I talked a little bit about the difference between, and which was certainly an education for me, the difference between reason and loyalty. That it's more, loyalty is more important to some people. Mm-hmm. To someone like me, reason trumps everything.
Yeah.
You know, that if, you know, I'm a product of the Enlightenment, if you want to go back, you know, I see that reason, should be the driving factor in most things.
And I was saying that about truth. I mean, I was saying about the truth and comfort, Andrea. The same sort of thing that Mike sees, I see from a slightly different angle. I see what he's talking about. What do you think? Why should we value truth over comfort? And why should we value it over, what Mike is talking about?
No, I mean, that, I think, really comes down to a fundamental issue about, again, what we value as people. And I think that, you know, I would just say, you know, for myself, probably in many instances, I value my comfort over seeking more truth, right? There are always more things I could learn about the world. And, you know, sometimes I just want to read a book or go for a run. So I think that this idea that we should be constantly, vigilantly, as much as possible, be pursuing truth and never worry about our own comforts is a really high standard. So first I'm going to say that it's like natural for people to want to be comfortable and happy and enjoy their lives. And I think that we can do this at the same time that we're pursuing truth, right? Well, so go ahead.
No, I was at your function. I was talking about this in with someone, and as you do, you mine ideas that you have that you didn't know you had. So I'm having trouble understanding why someone would be, and even brothers in the same family in this particular case, why somebody would be, sees the brother doing incredible harm. You know, he's beating his wife, but this is my brother, so I won't turn him into the police. I won't solve this problem. Loyalty over reason. The reason says, and then I asked what would you rather have, a reasonable husband or a loyal husband? And she looked at me like I was crazy. Well, of course. Yeah, I mean, you know, that, and this was tough, actually, but, you know, this particular case, loyalty meant more than reason when you frame it like that. And so I understood how somebody could value something more than reason.
I think what we're getting at is that truth is one value, but there are many other values in play, if I read what you said. And there's, it's not an absolute thing. I guess what Mike and I are worried about is an environment where lying by the President of the United States is a constant thing.
Normal.
It's becoming the new normal. His behavior is becoming the new normal. And the tissue of lies is so elaborate, and people still believe it, even though it's obvious. A lot of the stuff is obviously not true. And why do they believe it? They believe it because he's telling them something that they want to hear, even if it's not true. And I guess that's what we're talking about, is how truth plays in. I certainly agree that it's just one value. I mean, you know, I like to take a nap in the afternoon occasionally, you know.
So I think that the value that's really in play there is the value of honesty. And I think that for most of us, honesty is a shared value, especially when it comes to communication from our government. And so I think that you're absolutely right to point out that there are different values in play. We order our values differently, right? Loyalty, the pursuit of truth, honesty, these are all values, and sometimes some people will rank loyalty above honesty, others will rank honesty above loyalty. How we order values is something that's an individual choice, but I think when we can identify our shared value, I think the reason alternative facts makes the hair bristle on the back of people's necks is because it's an offensive to those of us that have the shared value of honesty and feel like the communication that we get from our government should at least strive to be honest. And when it doesn't just miss the mark, right, by accidentally, you know, misrepresenting something, when they are deliberately giving us misinformation and being dishonest, I think it's that shared value of honesty that everyone is offended by.
I think people begin to get the point that the first report, say, of an incident, whether it's a shooting or whatever it is, are usually wrong in some way. They get the number of assailants wrong, and they get this wrong, and it gets straightened out by more investigation.
Yes.
That's very different from lying about what happened in order to make yourself or your side or people you identify with look good.
With the short time we have left, Andrea, I want to ask, part of what I'm worried about, what I wanted the show to be about this morning, was how we deal with it. Okay, we have alternative facts. We have, so how do we, and like I said, I've seen people dealing very, but just shutting down.
Don't do that.
Okay.
I agree with her. Don't do that. I think, you know, the way we deal with it, I think we're seeing Americans deal with it in really wonderful and engaged ways. I mean, again, we've seen these grassroots organizations pop up. I think we had 2,000 people at the march in Sedona. I mean, for a town of 10,000, that's pretty significant, right? You know, again, membership in organizations like the League is changing. We see people get engaged in politics. So people should absolutely understand that they can vote, that their vote matters at every level. They should also understand that we talk about voting like it's really simple. It's not. There are usually many, many decisions to be made on the ballot.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that voting, for some reason, we consider it this private, sacrosanct act, you know, something you do. I think we really need to get more public about voting. Like, get copies of the ballot. Get together with your friends. Go to a coffee shop. Go to a bar. Talk about it. Think it over. Don't make this an act that you have to do once private. privately by yourself. There are a lot of important decisions to make on the ballot, so show up, vote, and talk it over with your friends.
So we have a president who's just constantly dishonest. I mean, I sometimes wonder if he has any concept of the truth the way most of us have. You know, even people who lie a lot know what the truth is that they're lying about. When I see Donald Trump at work, I'm not sure that that function. People are talking about the post-truth world, where that function of knowing that you're lying when you're lying doesn't seem to exist for this man.
I'm talking about the Robert Reich reactions here. Shutting down. Now I see people shutting down. You guys are an active. But I have a little, we'll talk about my guys at the coffee shop. They're saying, you go from shutting down to cynicism, to helplessness. A lot of people and of both genders, by the way, I got these big, strong men who feel helpless in the face of this onslaught.
But aren't both things true, guys?
I mean, I think people are, you know, maybe shutting down and people are becoming more active. Sure, both things are happening. But it's such a great opportunity for us to realize our own political authority and our own political agency. It's a great time, I think, for people to say, what can we do about this? And the answer isn't nothing, right? We can change who is in the Arizona legislature. The entire Arizona legislature will be reseated in 2018. We can change that, right? We can do a lot. We can change who's in the U.S. Congress. We can change things at the local level. Every person can vote and every person can affect who represents them. And I would like to put another call out there. The League of Women Voters just did a candidate boot camp. I think you've had Kathy Kinsella on here talking about
that. Yes,
and a lot of people are interested in running for office. And I think that is so inspiring. So I would encourage you, if you don't like the people that are in there, really consider doing it yourself. We need more people to run for office. And if you can't run yourself, consider supporting a candidate. Really get involved in a campaign. There's a lot that people can do.
Did you go?
I went to the one session. I was at workshops.
Yeah, we
and
want to
conferences
encourage conservatives and moderates and everybody to run for office. I mean,
Tom Hanks is running for office. Is that just an internet thing?
I don't know.
America
don't
needs him. And I don't know who The Rock is, but somebody called The Rock is running for office.
I think what Andrea is saying is that there's this massive lie machine, and there's this disenchantment with everything that's going on. And the response to it, you're saying the response to it is more involvement. You don't like what's going on, or you think what's going on is mischievous. You get involved yourself and you will feel better as well as do better for our country.
Yeah, I really do believe that. And I think that there are opportunities to get involved. I mean, there are two memes out there that are just false, right? Okay, so there's this belief that your vote doesn't matter. That is false. That is absolutely false. And the amount of money that is spent on political campaigns wouldn't be spent if the vote didn't matter.
That's a very good point.
So your
but
vote
young people
matters.
Believe that their vote doesn't matter.
No, I'm going to stick up for the young people here. I think the millennials are absolutely amazing. And I will tell you, my partner, Matt, you know, teaches philosophy. And he talks to these young people about being in city council, presenting information publicly all the time. No one ever had these conversations with me when I was in college. I think our young people are recognizing that they're going to have to live in a world of anthropogenic climate change, and they're paying attention to the political system and thinking about how they
Good.
Can get involved.
I accept that.
Well, we've got 1 minute left, Mike, we need to do this again sometime and talk some more, because it's a little a bit of a stretch for us on Democratic perspective to bring in a philosopher to talk about truth,
yeah.
justice.
When they get along, you know, I remember reading spending an entire course reading 47 pages of philosophy. Who does that? Well, philosophy people do, but we want to say before we run out of time, we want to thank Steve Segner and all those fine people over at El Portal for their support of Democratic Perspective. We want to thank the people at Democrats of the Red Rocks for their great and continued support of our show, Democratic Perspective. We want to remind everyone that the Dory breakfasts are fascinating and getting very well attended, speaking of involvement. There's a political speaker usually every month. You can find this show and all our shows on bbid.org. We have an archive of our 45-minute shows and our 30-minute shows and our 15-minute shows all on bbid.org, bbid.org. is our website. A great synopsis and a podcast of the show. Thank you, Andrea. I'll get it straight here.
Okay. And yeah. And we'll be rebroadcast this Sunday at 12:15. If you want to listen to parts of the show again, or if there's something that...
Saturday, 12:15.
No, you can also contact us. Is there something that you want to know that we didn't get to? You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news and our Saturday replay after the noon news right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.